What up, what up? This was by far one of my favorite podcasts that we have done so far. It is with Jimmy Conrad, former teammate of mine. We played together for a couple of years at Sporting Kansas City in the MLS. And we get into some real stuff. How you should actually be training, what you should actually be doing, who you should be listening to, and so much more. So make sure to check out the video version of this on YouTube. It was a really interesting thing to do because what you realize and see is that this is a guy that I was looking up to. When I joined that club, I was probably 20 or 21. And so Jimmy was one of the guys that I looked up to. So it's actually pretty cool to be able to do a podcast with him after all these years. So enjoy this. Shout out to Rode for sponsoring the podcast. We love you guys and you make us sound so good. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Check out everything else we got going on, and we will see you guys next week. No, we will see you guys tomorrow for Biscuits and Tea. Later.
The way of Will John.
No intro in the podcast today, my friends. The great man, the big JC, Jimmy Conrad. What's up, bro?
What's up, dude? It's been a long time. We have a pretty long history for our friendship. We've known each other for many, many years. So I'm always excited to catch up with, as I remember, younger players who had their whole careers in front of them. And I don't know how well I guided you back in the day, but it was always fun having you around because you definitely had the sauce, as I like to say.
Yeah, man. You did. As a matter of fact, I was thinking just the other day, I got a question in an interview that I did about captains that I had. And so I had never done this, but I kind of ran back and I was trying to think, did I have any shitty captains?
Great.
And I was going through, no, and honestly, I've been very lucky. I mean, I don't know that guys, you know, cause it's possible to run on a team where the captain is like a mafia boss. He's just kind of like running, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
No, man, I have very good memories. You did a great job back then of, cause it was hard. I mean, shit, back in the day with the way the MLS was, and okay, for the guys who don't know, we played together in Kansas City Wizards, what it was called, now Sporting Kansas City, 2006 and 7, maybe. Were you there both those years?
Yes.
Yeah, you were there both those years. All right. That's right. So I came from, yeah, I can remember at least a couple. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you two stories. I remember two separate times. One, when we were running, we were doing preseason running and stuff like that. You kind of just came up to me and you, instead of shouting, which we had some, you know, we had some people around that could do a fair amount of shouting back in that day. You were just like, this is what will help your game. You're like technical. When you play quick, you play smart. You know, you above a lot of the older guys that I'd had up until the point I was like 24, you know, when you start to make that turn in your career where you're not getting shouted at, you know, I remember that speech really well because you just kind of gave me the hints of what I needed to hear, what I should focus on. And that was important, you know, for a guy like me trying to figure everything out. And then I can remember when we were playing in Arrowhead. Now this must have been whatever, before the new training, maybe it's 2006. I don't know.
Yeah. No, we were still at Arrowhead at that time.
Okay. How old were you then?
2006. 30? I was 29.
You're 29. Okay.
Yeah.
You came in one time.
Yeah. Okay, I played, no. That was my World Cup year. I was in good form at that point. That was like peak Jimmy. Yeah.
Peak Jimmy. Okay. You came in, it was really hot. It was really hot, whatever. And I remember our locker, cause do you remember where our locker was? So you were directly to the right of me. You came in and I don't know if I was playing or if it was training or what. You ripped your shirt off. It was like, it's got like 8,000 pounds of sweat. you know how heavy the jerseys were back then too. And like you throw on the ground and you take a water bottle and you literally inhale it. Like I've never seen – it was one squeeze, Jimmy. You went whoosh like this and you threw it – you put it on the thing and you threw it down and I'm watching you. No one else is watching you. I'm just sitting there, you know. And then you grabbed another water bottle and then started going whoosh. And I was just like – it was just one of these moments that I just never forget because you did it with like no, you just didn't care. You know, and it's just like I've always remembered that. It's animalistic. But
what a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it is funny the little things that you remember. Like, I can't remember a lot of specific games, but I remember a lot of locker room stuff.
Right?
I know.
Yeah. And our big old TV we had in there. Things are different now. Things are so different. What's up with you now, though, man? There's so much. You have so much going on now that it's impossible for me. I didn't even – just before this podcast, I just found out about the Power Hour. Am I saying that?
The Power Hour. That's right. Yeah. So ultimately, I have a good relationship with Twitch. To kind of maybe scale back, once I retired, I had a really good opportunity to get into media. I did stuff with Fox, so I went and put the suit on. I went into the studio. And what I learned about that experience was that it wasn't really for me, because you sit there, and obviously it's a skill. If you've ever seen the studio guys, they get the things in their ears. And what happens is, you know, Rob Stone will have it, or some guy, you know, big name, Lexi Lawless, will be talking. And then as they're talking, somebody being near you going, hey, you have 20 seconds to break down why Liverpool won the game. And you're like, it's going to take me, I think, a little bit more than 20 seconds to do that. Yeah. You know, so it was just a really weird and interesting kind of style of getting your message across. Thankfully, YouTube came around and provided me an outlet. That's when they, in 2012, they put $100 million into 100 channels. And one of them was a soccer specific one called Kick TV. So I moved to New York, took the family, like, let's just see what happens. Let's go for a year. No, sounds romantic. And that really blew up. We got to 1 million subscribers after 3.5 years.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So that really like spurred me on to the possibilities of this kind of new emerging media. And now fast forward to here, I try to be and have a presence on every platform. I'm on TikTok, you know, for the good stuff. And it's fun on TikTok because you can just try things.
Yeah.
Twitch is a little bit more long form, and everybody goes to Twitch for video game stuff. And I get that. But Twitch and I have a good relationship there. They wanted me to try like a show, and they could help just kind of see what else is out there and how people can be creative on their platform. That's a little bit above and beyond like just a normal podcast. So we try to add some production to it and make it look fun and have some, we do like deep soccer thoughts. It's like a lighthearted take on the game, but we'll get into it, man. Right. We'll have some real talk with our guests, and it's great. I encourage everybody just to give it a chance. So I've got that. Totally. And then on Twitter, I do like the soccer minute. You know, everything's like time related. I got the Power Hour, the soccer minute. I'm doing a podcast hasn't dropped yet, called Mind Your Business. And it's about the sports psychology side. Because when we evaluate players, and even when you go trial somewhere or go play for a team, we're usually evaluated on physical ability, technical ability, and tactical ability. But you and I both know that it's really what's happening between the ears that's going to determine whether you make it or not. Can you cope with adversity? Can you cope with success? Can you manage expectations? Can you manage pressure? All that stuff. So I have a sports psychology friend. We're doing this, and we're interviewing really talented people from all walks of life. Any sport, business, music, arts, all that stuff. So it's been really good and fun. So that'll be dropping soon. And then I do Coach Jimmy's, and I just, you know, on Instagram, and I try to have some fun, you know, in different ways. And so it's been good. It's been good to have all these different platforms, and I see you doing your thing as well. So I feel like we're living similar lives in some ways, except I'm not chasing I don't need to play anymore. You know, I'm not chasing the dream of being a professional
you
athlete.
You could, everybody's coming out of retirement, Jimmy.
No, I just saw Gigi Buffon just signed another contract at age 42. I was like, well, shit, then I might as well lace him up. I see some really bad defending out there. I think I can still help.
Yeah, dude. No, I mean, yeah, there's so much in there. That's fascinating with the psychology one. We've had on so far, so we had on Scott Young. I'm not sure if you know who that is, the MIT dude. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really cool, really interesting. And Ryan Stock does Mind Sport. It's all about psychology and meditation for that. And then I had on this guy named Ed Hawkins. He wrote, he's going to kill me. He's British, but he wrote this book that ended up, and hopefully I'm not giving away too much, but he basically, he interviewed guys from the NFL all about the crazy things that they needed to do. And he started out with a question. If they're willing to put hundreds of millions of dollars into these guys' bodies, if they're willing to, you know, do whatever it takes to make them better, what would they be willing to do to fix their minds? Is there some other type of thing that they would be doing? And he goes on this crazy journey into figuring out, and it gets nuts. But then what you find out is that obviously it's some of the people that are messing around with some of the most futuristic ways, you know, of cultivating the flow state and all that stuff are guys that, you know, guys that have won Super Bowls. And there's rumors of guys in our sport, you know, changing their bones and their bodies it's just, what is going on, you know? But that's a part of the world that kind of fascinates me. And then, well, speaking of
No, I just to jump in on that point really quick. I just feel like everybody's trying to gain an advantage, right? When you're a professional athlete, it's the margins are so fine, and the line between success and failure is so thin that if guys can find a way to gain an advantage on somebody else, even if it's your closest and nearest and dearest friend, because you're competing to put food on the table, dude, guys are going to do it. I don't know how much we were subjected to it at an MLS level when the MLS is still emerging, but I'm not surprised to hear that there's a lot of interesting things. I'll just say, quote unquote, interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, and that's the thing in sports like this, people are going to be right at the very tip edge of, you know, all the technology trying to do all that stuff. What I was going to say about, cause you mentioned crazy defending, and I don't remember, Coach Jimmy is the one that comes out on Instagram. Yeah.
I put it on Twitter too. Yeah. I mean, but ultimately it's on Insta. I just break down plays. I mean, ultimately, honestly, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to show that European leagues have some shit players in defending as well, and that the perception of MLS should change a little bit, and that the league is getting better. But then, of course, the Euro snobs come back and they're like, oh, but that happens every week in MLS and only happens once in the Bundesliga. And you're like, dude, just exactly. I could find a highlight every single week, you know, but
100%.
But so ultimately, that's the crux of it. And I'm in on the joke, but there are some people that take it very seriously and don't like it when I make fun of their league or their favorite team. And they have to get over it. Yeah, get over it.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that was the thing. And did I see a goalie essentially mess up in one of the Coach Jimmy's? It's funny because I didn't, I stay off of Twitter because I am the kind of guy that just, I can't get into it just seems like it's the place for negativity. And I don't want to call the whole thing because it's also used for great things and protests and to move things forward. But it just seems like if I posted a picture of a baby next to a puppy, someone would be like, well, that isn't really the right puppy to be next. It's just some thing.
Photoshop, man. It's a Photoshop. That puppy would never sit still next to the baby. Yeah. It's very toxic and very cynical. Yeah.
Yeah. So I tend to be off there. Not at all. I mean, I have a profile, but I'm not really
I'm
there.
Sure your mental health thanks you, I think.
That's it. That's where it's all about, though, honestly. And speaking of all the rest, what are you doing now to stay fit? What is Jimmy? Actually, before I go there, I know you will get there. This will naturally lead you to that question. We get tons, because you guys know on our YouTube channel, it's all, most of the time when we started it, we thought we were going to be making videos for kids essentially, or about to 18. What it turned out is our demographic is 13 to 40. So coaches started writing in about how they were using this stuff to train their kids and they wanted to use. And so we realized, you know, what was going on, but we get all these questions from guys on how to make it, how they should train, what if you could cut
honestly,
down,
because I love that you're doing this for the community and I'm happy that you're getting compensated for your time fairly. Hmm. That must be a very tiring question to answer. I get a lot. I get it in my DMs all the time. And every time I see it, I definitely want to pay it forward, right? And give back advice that I got. But it's not just simple. I can't just simply write. You know, it takes time. It's nuance. There's subtlety, you know. But ultimately, at the crux of it, and I think you can speak to this as well, and I'm pretty sure you have over many, many years, everybody's looking for a shortcut. Everybody's looking for the secret. And the secret is there are no shortcuts. That's the secret. Yeah. Like you have to put the work in. And it's crazy. Even though people hear this, they'll listen to what I'm saying. They hear you say the same thing. They hear or see somebody else who has had quote unquote success, maybe in a different walk of life or whatever else they're pursuing. But yet they still are looking for some secret, some shortcut. You're like, no, that's the thing. So
you're holding out on him. What are you holding out on?
Exactly.
Him for,
yeah. I mean, my dad, I'm sure your dad was the same. Like how did Will or how did Jimmy, you know, get to this level? And my dad was like, yo, he just put the work in. I don't know what you want from me. And it's like they wouldn't believe him, you know, but they're willing to pay thousands of dollars for whatever they need. And we don't need to get into the pay to play stuff, but it's a bigger conversation. Well, we can if you want,
fine.
Yeah, it's interesting that everybody wants like this magic elixir that doesn't exist. The magic is just putting the work in and doing it,
that's
putting the steps in.
That's totally true. I I do. You mentioned people willing to pay thousands of dollars. I would say across the entire landscape of the platform, because I mean, it's rare to have, to be honest, guys like us that are wanting to do a whole bunch. You're on all these platforms. You know, I'm creating different media. We've got a team. We're going out here. It's a lot, you know, and I don't know if you would have done it while you were playing, you know, and I am, but I would never recommend anyone to do this if they were a young guy and they wanted to focus on the game. It would just be not manageable. Mm-hmm. And you know, I never let football suffer, but I'm at a different stage in my career. It's different from the time I was 30 by the time I started. I understand how to use my time, et cetera. But one of the things that annoyed me, and it just doesn't, I don't understand why this is a thing in society. And maybe you can, maybe you got some answers. You can bring wise Jimmy and come on. Why is it okay? Like, because YouTube is accessible to everyone, because mm-hmm. Twitch and all those things, you know, are accessible, and you can make videos on anything. You and I could get together and we could talk, we could make a tutorial on how to fly a rocket ship when neither of us has done any of that. And we could do that and we could put it out there and it could get up there. I did get kind of annoyed as I was learning, you know, because it's been about 4 years now that we've been making videos and doing stuff, at seeing some of the nonsense. And I don't want to knock on people. I'm not trying to say that, but I'm just saying, why is it okay for, and you would never do this in any other realm. This is my thing, is that if you went to a doctor and he said, I've never practiced medicine, would you let him operate on you? And the answer would be no.
Would you, so why? Is this like a is this a freestyle doctor? is he only doing freestyle surgery? Or yeah, what
is he doing? I don't. I'm just kidding.
I get it.
So that was one of the things that also helped. Not to say, oh, only listen to me. It's not, and that's not the message that we're out there doing. But it does make sense. Just like we want guys that play the game to come back and coach, guys that play the game to go be referees, guys that play the game to come be involved in the federation. You want guys that are involved and that have played to be the ones teaching, because it's also, we're also at a stage in our society where people are still doubting the power of social media, as we are continually getting reminders of how incredibly influential it is every day. And I'm mm-hmm. trying to make the point that over the course of the next 10 years or so, many of the players you're going to be seeing on the national team and playing at a higher level are going to be influenced by the people that they're watching on YouTube, et cetera. So we want good role models for them. That's just my thing, I guess. It pisses me off.
Well, no, I get it. I mean, 100%. When I have two kids of my own and they don't watch TV, they consume YouTube. I mean, that's like their main source of entertainment. Are they going there to find inspiration? Maybe. I think they're looking to find funny cat videos, you know, like the rest
there
of us.
There you go.
But you know, they have fallen into a couple entertainers that they and channels that they like to follow and like the storylines that are happening. I don't necessarily relate to that content, but it really is an interesting social experiment to see how they're consuming. Now, for you and I think we both grew up on cartoons after school, you know, and that was where we had to go find it. But these, I mean, the immediacy of the media, you can have it anytime is really interesting. And I think it's going to shape a lot of, I would say important people moving forward. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people that are going to be leaders. So yeah, you're right. Having role models is important. I don't know exactly how you want me to answer this per se. I have my own little pet peeves online because it does get frustrating that as an American too, right? Cause we don't have an accent or whatever, but I'm trying to do and make videos that, going to prove credibility in some ways, but I have to almost double down, triple down. Like, dude, a guy that has never played just mm-hmm. watches, not to disrespect that. Everybody has the right to their opinion. Maybe for he sure. knows how to title a video better, right? Maybe he adds some graphics and make it a little bit better in some ways. But what he's saying is kind of, there's nothing to it. Like he's never played, so how can he really get into the nuance and subtlety of it? This feels very elitist to me to say, but it does get frustrating because he knows how to play the YouTube game. They know how to play the YouTube game. They don't necessarily know how to play the game itself. So I put out like what I think is a meaningful video and has some really good insight. And it's like, oh, shut up, you stupid Yankee. You know, we call it football, not soccer.
Yeah. Oh,
and you're like, what is this even about? You know, like, I just don't, It's crazy, yeah. Dude. So like that gets frustrating at times. And
totally.
Because I think the hard part is that you and I are both competitors, right? We both got to a certain level because we compete. And it's hard. Whether those followers that people have are fake or not, it still fires you up that they have more than you do, right? I mean, it's just a natural human response. And as players that have been shaped with a singular focus to be high-level competitors, it's hard to just turn that off and throw it off. Like, I think they're fake. I don't know, right?
But
so you just compete in so many different ways, and it does get frustrating. But similar to your mentality with regard to Twitter, I have to figure out a way to just shut that off. And at the end of the day, I think why your content resonates with people and why mine does too is because we just really love doing what we're doing, you know. And if there's a passion there and there's a love for the content you're making, and it's clear that you're having a great time while you're making it, I really feel like that ends up winning out. And at some point, those other people are going to burn out. And I think what you and I have done pretty well is that we understand what it takes to stay with it and to fight through the adversity and keep going. So I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, when I flip that switch, and you've seen me have crazy eyes before on the field, like it's hard to turn
crazy
that off.
Crazy eyes are great.
It gets a little crazy. But I would say that I'll tell you one thing, that the crappy part about once you retire and you're done with playing is you don't have that outlet anymore to compete.
Sure.
So then you kind of put it in areas that you never put it in before, like chasing random YouTubers. Like, why do they have so many more followers? How are they doing? My videos are just as good. You know, start complaining about that. And then like getting super competitive with your 9-year-old over board games, you know, and it's crazy.
Gotta channel it.
You gotta channel it. But I don't know. Crazy eyes is pretty good.
Yeah. Crazy eyes is crazy. I can't remember. I'm sure if I just sat there and meditated for a second, I could get some cool crazy eyes story. I do. I can feel them bubbling around in my head. I can feel crazy eyes is a real thing, people. So I just want everyone to understand that crazy eyes is definitely a real thing. When you know which tackle to pull out of when Jimmy's coming in.
Can I give you a story? This is kind of funny. It kind of speaks to this a little bit. I think there's a tie in. So there's a big, is it Pana, right? Where you try to make somebody. So it's a big thing, and obviously it's gained a lot of growth and momentum online, and there's some incredible players that are out there doing their thing and are very good at it. Now, when I travel, I do pickup games around the world, and it's awesome. Like, I'll just tell people where I'm going to be, and like sometimes 20 people show up, sometimes I have over 100, and you're like, what is happening? But they're really positive and always fun, and it's just cool, like the diversity at all these different ages. Different sizes, different colors, different backgrounds, cultures. It's amazing. So I love doing it, and the vibe is great. But I did one in Minneapolis, and it was at this place called Joy of the People, and I love it. It's like a futsal facility and in an underserved community, and I love everything that they're doing. However, they foster it. Well, I don't know if they do, but it fosters a sense of this Pana culture. So we go, we're playing pickup, and you know, there's a bunch of like 14-year-old, 15-year-old guys that come to this a lot, and they want to meg me ultimately, right? So one of them megs me, and all of his boys are like, "Ooh,
yeah, of course."
But he megs me, okay, and the ball goes to one of my teammates, and I was like,
"I know where this is going."
I was like, "What? Why is everybody going?" Dude, I went up to him. I said, listen, you can meg me all day if the ball goes to my team and we end up winning the game.
You.
I'm like, dude, I don't care.
I know.
But he's walking around like he just like, he got me, bro. You got me, bro. You know? And I was like, dude, I said, listen. So listen, this is where the crazy eye starts to click. So all of a sudden, I can sense that that doesn't faze him, what I said. Like, the turnover doesn't matter. He megged me. Like, that's the game.
It's over. Yeah, it's done.
So he's like walking around like he is hot shit, dude. I'm like, okay. I said, listen, I'm up here playing like a number 10 because I fancied myself as a closet play, you know, box-to-box midfielder or whatever, playmaker when I was a player, but I had to play center back. So, you know, pickup games, I just play a little bit. If you want me to be back as a defender, I know how to defend, dude. Right now, this is all fun and games.
Exactly.
If you want me to defend, I am 100% happy to do that.
Right.
And he just kind of didn't really, I don't think he was listening at that point.
He didn't comprehend what was going to happen.
He didn't comprehend. So I just like, all right, I'm going to put the glove on this guy, dude. So I put the glove on this kid. And I said, listen, if you meg me and you run around me and you get it, right, like a proper meg as I see it.
Right.
Yes. Dude, hat tip to you, no problem. I won't even throw an elbow if it's that good. You know what I mean? Like, in a real game, I'd obviously try to stop that.
You'd
if it's so clean, okay, no problem. I'm not, you're 14, it's a pickup game, whatever.
Right.
So I put the glove on him, dude. I'm like, are you going to try to put it between my legs? Where are you going? You know, so I just talked to him as we were running. Like, where are you going? Ooh, you're playing backward. Oh, you're playing backwards. Mm.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Oh, no. Mm, must be, ooh, playing safe. I see how this is. Oh, so when somebody challenges you in a real way, you're going to play it safe, huh? So I'm just running my mouth at this guy, dude.
Exactly.
And he's trying to run past. He tries to go past me, and I just start laughing at him. And and I hit the switch, dude. I'm like, I don't ever compete.
Yes.
And I can't deal with this Pana culture.
No.
I can't. I cannot deal with it. I can't, dude. And so,
bro.
So, dude, the guy, we win. My team wins. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's funny. Did that Pana lead to a win for you? You know, and so whatever, the next team comes on, the kid goes off, he's crying, dude.
Oh, no. He got a real taste.
He starts crying, dude. I was like, honestly, for that real, like, if I'm talking to you, like, from a diehard competitor, I don't give a shit if he's crying.
I don't you should, though.
If anything, I'm going to make him better. I'm like,
you have.
Listen, you want to take this, whatever you got going right here, this Pana, like, feeling good about yourself, you want to take that out to a professional environment, dude, you'll get two-footed so fast.
Oh my God.
Dude, you have no idea. You have absolutely zero idea what this is, what you're trying to do here, showing up other players.
Yeah.
Especially ones that don't lead to success. That doesn't fly. So listen, fast forward to this thing. I'm around, now I'm starting to play with some of these guys on my team, right?
Sure, sure.
Because the team's mix. These dudes don't pass. All they're doing is looking to play the pot. I'm like, dude, what are we even doing out here? Like,
it's not a team sport.
Just make a good soccer decision, dude. Don't.
Yeah.
Like, they do. Honestly, their feet are amazing. Don't get me wrong. They have incredible feet. Their skills are ridiculous. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But when they have, when they're presented with an opportunity to make the right pass or to take the space in front of them, they wait. I can't. That's my pet peeve. That is one of my biggest pet peeves.
I'm different though.
Anyway, so that's my pet peeve. Yeah. I'm tying it in with me having crazy eyes. I completely shredded this 14-year-old kid mentally. Maybe an hour later I felt bad about it, but for that next hour I didn't feel bad about it at all.
No. You've done the kid a great service. He's learned. He understands now. Oh, I see. I see what it takes.
Hopefully.
I see the mentality. hopefully. And if not, it's going to happen again, Jimmy, until he gets it right, or he moves on to something that, you know, where it allows him to just do Panas all the time. And just like you said, I just want to put my two cents in there. I know some of these street, like Pana guys, the guys that do that, and their skills are unbelievable. All that stuff is good. And it's really interesting because in order for – you were allowing – it's not like you allowed him to do that nutmeg back then, but you were – it's whatever. It happened. It does this thing. You could have two-footed, and that's the thing with a Pana. I don't know if they know that as well in their tournaments. If you bring in some guys who know how to defend, who have played to defend, they're not even going to give you an opportunity to set up for these things.
Exactly, exactly.
They don't care. It's a different world.
It's
so,
really funny, man. Seon Garnier, he's one of the top freestylers. Really sweet guy.
Yeah.
Awesome. I've seen him play in games, like in proper games.
Okay.
I the guy can play, but
sure.
If you put him in a proper environment, like he doesn't stand out.
No.
He plays simple more often than not. You know, the F2 guys, though, Billy's great. Jeremy hates me because every time they post something, I'm like, you're doing these moves against defenders that aren't even defending. Like, we talk about role models, right? We talk about role models and how to play the game correctly. Yo, these moves don't work in a game. And I did one of those Wembley Cups and we played against the F2 guys.
Oh, yeah.
And there's 30,000 people at Wembley. Most of them are there for F2. And I, you know, run around with Jeremy and I'm like, yo, you're going to do one of these moves? That's why these kids are out here. But he honestly for 90 minutes didn't do any of his moves because he knows they don't work in a real game. And that's what frustrates me about that. That's one of my pet peeves. I completely, these guys have more like skill than I'll ever have. But when it comes to the game itself, it's not a disrespect to their skill and their ability.
No,
their grind. Those guys grind to get better.
Like ballers.
But there's a but there because it doesn't translate to the real game. And that frustrates me because then you have all these kids that are trying to emulate something. And those guys take 80 takes as well. You know, it's not like they do everything first time. So
exactly, you know, and the same with us. And when I do the moves, and especially I'm trying to explain, that's the entire, as you've used the word crux, that's the entire crux of our channel. This will work for you in a game. I know that because of, not only have I watched Ronaldinho do it, I watched Ronaldinho do it, figured out what was good about it, applied it to my game, and then did it in the game. Here's how I did that.
Yes,
that's
exactly
what, and that's how I try to pass along the information. And so I'm all for all the tricks and all the things that I've done. And you know how the way that I play, you know that I enjoy all this stuff and I've got the ability to do those things. And if I were to quit playing football right now, I'm sure that I could be quite the freestyler if you give me 10 years.
No question.
I have no doubt about this. You know,
it would take you less than 10 years. Less than 10 years.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Totally. I agree. And, you know, so within every footballer, there is a freestyler. For a freestyler, you can't just take that training and just apply it to the game. And so that is a message that needs to be said. It's not a knock on any of them.
No,
there has to be a separate form for that world.
Well, that's why I appreciate your content, because you are, even when you go to coach, right? It's the kids have to understand when and where to use these particular moves. They need to understand the timing of it, the in relation to what's happening, right? There's so much spatial awareness that you have to have as well that get factored into this type of decision making. You know, I when I coach, and I coach a fourth division USL League 2 team, I tell my guys that I'm going to set parameters. There's certain things that I want us to do. I want us to move as a group, our team shape. But I understand also, because I was a player once too, there's a certain part of the game that you love. That's why you play. There's something that you're drawn to. And for some of you guys, it's taking people on 1v1. I don't want to take that away from you. What I want us to do is to put you in a position to do that successfully, and not where you're on an island and you're trying to do it all by yourself. We're going to try to shape our team into a spot where, if we have someone as talented as Will John, we get you in a spot where you're starting to pick up the ball in between the lines, maybe, you know, 5-10 yards off the top of the box, where you can turn and run at people. Like, that's what we want to do. And then you can be yourself. But
exactly.
But it, you know, if all these kids are trying these moves or doing, you know, Pana, you know, it,
yeah,
you know, it, just to do it. Yeah, dude, whatever. It's just frustrating. So I really appreciate your content, because, and I think that's what separates
that's
it.
Cool.
Because you do give it a real life component, whether it's you pulling it off or Ronaldinho or whoever it may be. The fact that they can see it, and there's a tangible, you know, a visual that they can rely on and understand when and where. I mean, that's really important.
Last thing on this, since I have plenty of other curious things to ask about. We have a goalkeeping page as well. I don't know if you know that. It's called GK Golarami. And on there, we did a video about one of the other modern goalkeeping. So one of the other goalies out there who's all about saves and dives. And, you know, the thing that's really interesting, because I'm not, and I'm also, for all of you guys listening to this, if you want to see Instagram's greatest goalkeeper, that would be me diving around. I've had 8 trainings, I think. So we put out this series, the vlog series of 100 days. You know, these things have become popular. 100 days to pro, 100 days to, I don't think the kids, I don't think young kids, I would never tell them to do this. I think I think you need to focus on the thing, focus on playing, focus on training. Don't do that. However, I'm in a different spot. So I got a hundred trainings, Jimmy, to become a pro goalkeeper, you know?
Okay.
So I'm on, I think we're on 8. I'm doing it with Brandon Milburn, another guy, you know, who played and coaches with us. And we, you know, for the most part, just take the piss out of goalkeepers. And so we never took it seriously when one of our goalies in our company was getting increasingly annoyed at what's going on, because it was the same thing. Someone was training in a way that is not likely to lead you to any success. I don't know anything about goalkeeping. I clearly don't. It's all tongue in cheek. It's a joke, you know, when I'm out there and doing it. But I don't want to say I was shocked, but he ended up making a video about this, and the fact that it resonated so much with the community, to the fact that literally people are just saying, I told you, I knew this wasn't how you were supposed to do it. And it just, I had no idea that sort of, and you know, goalkeepers are all crazy. I mean, I don't know how many goalies you play with. I don't know if you've ever played with a normal goalie.
No. It's like the normal goalkeepers that I play with don't last very long. because they're too normal. Like you have, they have, like for us, we have a switch, right? We'll hit the switch. These guys, their switch is already on. They have to turn off their switch. I think it's like the opposite.
But that's it.
That's interesting. So were you making fun of modern goalkeeping in some ways?
So no, it wasn't about
not necessarily making fun of him directly, but just kind of like his style, because that feels like he's like doing the freestyle goalkeeping. You know, he's showing you
that
like
that can be a thing.
Yeah, right. In some ways.
Yeah. Well, he dives over benches. It's like he's diving. He's not diving out of cars or anything like that. But it's just to that level of madness. He's diving over this. He's diving over that. It's all diving, because honestly, if I had to go in goal, all I would want to do is dive, and that's all I do in the training. I just want to dive. It's fun,
right?
And that's not what goalkeeper training is. It's very monotonous. They need to make sure their positioning is very good. They have to take shots here. They have to worry about these. It's very meticulous and monotonous, and the training that they do is hard, and it requires thinking. And so Tyler Back is his name. We played together in Finland at the year after we almost won the league. But he just pointed out, he just wanted people to know. That was it. I don't think he knew that it would have such an effect. He just wanted to make this point. It wasn't a beef. It's not, hey, I hate this. None of that. It was just, listen, guys, he says you're going to be a pro like this. I'm telling you guys, I've never seen anyone do this. It's going to be rare if you guys train like this. And all of a sudden, we've got Buffons just running up and down the field. So that was my last thing, you know.
No. I'm friends with Mike, modern goalkeeping guy. And everything looks great in slow-mo. And he's got amazing hair, by the way. And his
drop kicks. That's what I said.
Yeah, drop kicks are amazing. And, you know, but yeah, I can understand if you were a goalkeeper, why that guy would drive you crazy, because he's bypassing all of what matters to just do the romantic and sexy things, because he's got great ability. Every time I talk to him, or at least my biggest question for him is, dude, you look amazing. Why aren't you trying to play for a pro team?
Why not?
Because I think he either realizes he's not good enough when it comes to the real game, which I find it hard to believe. I mean, he looks like he's got all the tools, but you know that there's more than that, right? It's presence and communication and putting the guys in front of you in good spots and building rapport and not making it all about you. Yeah. A whole bunch of different stuff. And I'm sure it's a lot more lucrative doing what he's doing, and he's very good at
it.
And he puts that guy, I mean, all these guys, I mean, they grind, dude. They grind. I respect the grind. But it's an interesting kind of world we're in with regard to development, because the biggest and brightest names are kind of teaching you and showing you things that maybe aren't going to make you become a pro. Like, you have to really scale back and put in the hard work. But again, it gets back to people are looking for shortcuts and the secret sauce, and nobody wants to accept that you just got to put the time in and grind. Yeah, grind at the basic stuff.
Well, then how, so for all these people who are 100% listening, and all these guys, the majority of people that float to our channel, obviously, they either, if they don't want to be pros, which majority of them do, they do want to get better. If you had to bubble it down, so I know you get that DM, and I'm sure we get similar DMs, and even we probably get DMs from the same people, our audiences.
Yeah, probably definitely overlap. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you had to, I've kind of gotten this question, you know, lately. What would you do? And I mean, I don't mean, hey, what to do about this position? What about this thing? But how do I'm 15. I want to be a pro. Do I need to focus on my running? Do I need to focus on my technical? Do I need to get bigger? Do I need to get stronger? Do you have anything that you would just streamline this process for guys? Is it mental, like, at all?
So the best piece of advice I ever received, I was 15, and it was from Marcelo Balboa's dad. Now, at that time, Marcelo Balboa had just finished playing in 2 World Cups. So to have his dad speak to us was very cool. We saw him at a youth tournament. My coach kind of guilted him into coming over and talking to us. And so my hand went straight up. I was like, oh, yeah, I got a question. This is the same question that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And it was, how did Marcelo play in 2 World Cups and represent our country? And for you and me, you know, we want to be very methodical and very thoughtful in our response and probably give you a 30-minute answer.
Yeah.
He looks at me and goes, he just went to the park and worked on his game every day for 2 hours. And he moved on to the next question. And I was like, wow. And I just couldn't believe he answered it so quickly. But then a light bulb quickly went over my head right after that. And I stopped listening to anything else because I was trying to absorb the power of that message. And it ultimately was, and the crux to our key word of today, the crux of the messaging was, it's up to you to decide how good you're going to be at anything. It's not on anybody else. If you want to be good at something, you have to go work on it. And it changed my whole life. That 30 seconds changed my whole life. So, well, what's funny is you take that, I give you this information, right? And so I took it, I absorbed it. All right, cool. I'm going to go to the school next to my house. They got a wall there. I'm going to work on my game for 2 hours. And I went out there. Will, no joke. I went out there.
Yeah.
And nobody was there. It's just me and the wall. And I'm like, okay, what do I do now? I just didn't have any ideas. Like, there was no YouTube at the time. There was no, you know, nothing to look at. So I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I don't juggle great. My left foot's not very good. I mean, I think it's pretty good. Dude, I start juggling and trying to do with my left foot. I was embarrassed. Listen, there's one thing to be embarrassed when you're around a group of people, right? And there's like some peer pressure or something didn't happen and so you fail and you're embarrassed because of that. Dude, I was embarrassed and nobody was there. No, that's how bad my left foot
Shame.
Was.
Yeah,
Shame. Yeah. Like and there's a couple layers to why this is important. But one of them was that I had to acknowledge that I wasn't as good as I thought I was. That's not easy, especially as a younger guy when you think you got it all figured out. That was very hard for me to accept. So what I did, I left after 10 minutes and I went back home and I played video games because that's easier. It's safer. I can live vicariously through a character in a video game. I can, you know, at that point there was no like internet. That dates me. It makes me feel very old, but you know, but my friends would come over. We go play video games. It's the same. You get in the same vibe, right? Whether you're talking through a headset or you're playing next to a buddy, you're still getting that same vibe. That was easier, but to my credit, I went back out there the next day and I still didn't know what to do, but I knew that, well, I probably should keep working on my left foot. And I started to create my own games. Okay. And it took a while, man. So, I give you that. I give you that advice about, oh yeah, I went to the park and worked on my. It's very easy to say that because that's kind of a generalization, but when you actually go and do it, it's something else entirely. And I think where the juice is you go out there and you start working on your game. And I would push myself, okay, let's do 15 minutes today, you know, and you start to develop games, as I said. And then when you get to practice and you start to realize that you're getting a little bit better than your teammates and the game kind of slows down in some ways because you're so confident now in your first touch and you're feeling a lot more comfortable with your left foot, it changes everything. And you start to see, God, look how much, like, I'm not getting that much better, but I'm definitely getting better. And what if I did it for 20 minutes instead of 10? I mean, would I be twice the player, you know? So once you start to implement that, also a secondary thing on this is that you start to crave how you can get better. And again, I didn't have YouTube. I didn't have those resources. You got to go to the source. You got to go to the coach. But when the coach would criticize you before, at least give you some advice, maybe not criticize, seems pretty harsh, you would probably get defensive about it. But when you start to open up yourself to, I just want to get better and have that mindset, you start to receive his information in a much different way. You start to like, oh yeah, that would be great. And then I'd start to go seek it out. What are my weaknesses? What do you see? And then he would tell me, like, okay, what do you think I can do to work on that? And dude, I would get that information and I'd go right home and structure it into everything I was doing at home. And it got to the point where I was working out like an hour and a half a day working on my game. And my mom would have to come get me. So it went from 10 minutes to that. Now this is over, you know, we're talking about a year, year and a half, where you're trying to really stretch it out. But you can start to imagine how I'm starting to scale and peg myself up higher and higher over everybody else. Finally made a state team, which is really hard in Southern California, and all these little things that started to happen for me. And like another byproduct of this is you learn how to cope with disappointment, because anytime you fail, you're like, oh man, great learning experience. How can I failed here. I'm not good enough here. Let's put it back into this little machine I've got that nobody knows that I've got going. It's my own personal thing. And how do I work on that? So, you know, is it a long ball? Is it getting the ball out of my feet? You know, whatever position you're playing, you can really develop these little tiny games to make it happen. on top of that, then you start to realize, God, if I went, what if I ran a little bit more? Do you think I'd be fitter? Yeah, that makes sense. You know, like, okay, I'm going to start to do that. Oh, maybe if I, my feet need to be a little bit quicker. Maybe I can get a speed ladder or whatever, you know, or we couldn't afford a speed ladder. I'll be honest. We didn't have a lot of money. So like, okay, I'll just set up like my Star Wars figures and I'll just like do,
yeah,
you know, fat,
whatever like, it takes,
whatever yeah. it takes. And so from that and that, but the seed of plant being planted of, it's up to me to decide how good I'm going to be at anything. Once you realize that and really own that and take responsibility for it and then start to act in a way that's going to help you build, whether it's school or sports or music or whatever it is, it changes everything. And I think you'll approach life in a much different way. So if there's any advice that I could give, and I know that wasn't a very short answer, but if anybody can absorb that information and then take ownership of it, it will make a big difference for you.
100%. And I can even say, because I learned that. I mean, you were around me as I was continuing to learn that type of thing in a professional setting, you know, at 20 and 21 years old. And that it is the key. It is one of the, I guess if you want to do call it that, that is the key. That is the one thing. If you're looking for a shortcut, if you're looking for where you should start on anything, it's between that little intersection of personal responsibility and you hold the answers to your own destiny within everything. It's not the world shook this and I didn't have the time for, and I didn't have the money for this. For every single answer and for every single thing that you have right there, somebody did it with conditions so far worse than yours. And they didn't even, not only that, they did it happy. Like they did it with a smile. Some of them just like, or this sucks, but I know it's not going to suck. And slowly, but surely they got that thing going. And to add to your story on my person, because you were what, 15 when you kind of figured that out at that first? So I was on what was USA's first U14 national team. And shout out to Neil Beathy, who was there. That's when I met Neil. But we went to Mexico and we played against Atlas and a few other teams. I cannot remember. In any case, I was playing left back. They put me at left back and not one of my favorite positions. I like to be in the action and I like to be offensive, but because I'm very technical, they put me back in. It wasn't that great of a week for me. Let's be honest. I didn't play horrible or anything.
You're
like
13,
that.
Dude. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. 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 I was like 13, 14, but I just wasn't happy. I didn't have as much fun as I normally do. Mm-hmm. The level was fine. I didn't really struggle with anything. It wasn't too fast, but it didn't go the way I wanted it to. And I can remember when we were in Guadalajara and, it was raining outside and everybody was basically kind of just ready to go. The tournament was over, but we still had this day before we were going to travel. I just remember being so upset and so I knew I needed to do something. But once again, just like you, I didn't know what I was supposed to do, but I knew I had to do something. So we're at a big courtyard compound place. They have these really weird type of some weird fruit. It's green. I have no idea if you can eat it or not. It was growing on these trees. I just grabbed this thing. It was raining and I said, I don't give a shit. I'm staying here until I juggle what I don't know what it was, but I stayed out there far too long and just kept juggling until I had achieved what I wanted to achieve in that moment. And then I didn't know this for sure, but when I came back from that trip and went to my club, I had grown so far, so fast that I realized, oh, so that's what's going on. Like so it's just that? You mean I just have to take it seriously for a little bit. And like spend all, and I was hooked. That was it. Yeah, it was over from then. And that for me changed everything. And I've been lucky enough to have parents and, you know, I mean, you know, my dad that encouraged and were calm and wanted to push me towards all of the interests that I have, which are incredibly varied. So I was able to luckily use that mentality into all the things that I'm also doing outside, you know, like what a important piece of the puzzle that doesn't get talked about maybe enough. I don't know if I would have ever learned that just in school, but
for sure. And I think what I like about your example, and I didn't bring one up, but I used to do it as well. So there's a very similar theme in terms of development. I used to have games where I would have to juggle without stopping, without the ball dropping from the school to my house. It's like four houses. I mean, if you have any kind of skill, it's not that hard. But for a person who actually struggled with juggling, because I just thought, you know, it was beneath me to learn how to juggle, I guess, when I was younger. Well, no, it's because I was afraid that I wasn't good enough. That's ultimately why I didn't do it. And I didn't want to practice at that time when I was a little bit younger, like 11 or 12. That was one of the games. Or then, you know, as you start to get better, you go left foot only, or, you know, or it's got to be left foot only below your chest or whatever, these little things. But yeah, if I started walking and I dropped it, I'd go back. And I just keep going back. Dude, I'd be out there for an hour and like losing my mind. I was so frustrated. And I think what's funny is in those moments, not only are you pushing yourself to get better, but you're also learning a very important mental skill, which is even though you're frustrated, even though you're upset, you still can find some inner peace to keep your concentration where it needs to go. So there's so many, and this is just you training by yourself. So this is an amazing time right now in the pandemic to kind of work on these things. And I think some kids are letting this opportunity slip and pass them by. But there's just so many little hidden gems of teaching by just going to work on your game by yourself. And I just wanted to throw that in because that really resonated with me, that example. Like having something, you can't go home until you do X, you know, and make it hard. Make it easy. That's one. Second thing I want to talk to you about, and a question I have for you, and one of another piece of advice that I don't get to offer up too much is, and I had to learn this the hard way, and I'm sure you did too, nobody owes you anything. Nobody owes you a goddamn thing. And the sooner that you can embrace that, I think your whole life's going to be a lot easier in a lot of different ways. But there's a sense of entitlement that I had. This isn't like a new thing. We talk about the new crop and the new generation and, you know, they got this sense of entitlement. Dude, whatever. We all had the same sense of entitlement. It just kind of showed itself in different ways. But once you really appreciate and understand that nobody owes you anything, you start to, again, attack life in a much different way. So I kind of wanted to know if you had any experiences where you thought that you felt owed and how that kind of crushed you. Whereas if you just would have had the right mentality and maybe embraced it with more positivity, more open-minded, maybe you would be farther along or maybe still whatever. I don't know. Not farther along might not be the right choice of words.
But. No, it's not the same. It's not the same message as the one, but they're clearly connected. And definitely. I'm telling you, like, you were there for some very interesting turning points, you know, for that and making the decision once again to take kind of the onus and responsibility on me to leave. Cause I didn't necessarily have to leave when I left, at 22, right? I think, I left and I went to Europe where I wasn't having a whole lot of success necessarily. I was clearly not bad or anything like that. I'm in a good position. I've got myself in a nice spot at a young age as a footballer, but like there is always, and you're right, there's no difference. There's nothing going on with this new generation to say, oh, they clearly think that they have. It does show itself in a different way. I definitely went through that in KC. I could have definitely. I mean, sometimes I would just blow up because I just – and also I don't want to make excuses for myself. But it's also part of the – I don't get it. What is going on? I feel like I should be. I did this thing.
I was going to jump in and say what I remember you the most. I mean, you could play. We all knew that you could play, but you always seemed frustrated, you know, and that maybe you thought you deserved more than what you were getting and more attention from whether it's the older players or from the coaching staff. Now, obviously, Bob Gansler is not an easy coach to play for, and he's not very warm and fuzzy and friendly. So I can understand why that would have been. Yeah, that's not his style. Mm-hmm. And tough love is the way to go. But I remember you just being really frustrated and it showed in your performances. And so, I was kind of curious.
Yeah, totally. Learning that, having to deal with that was hard. It's hard. It's just a hard thing. Maybe everybody has to go through. Maybe some people are lucky enough, or maybe some people don't push themselves to get to a point, you know, because it's not out of it's partly out of I deserve to play. You also have to be, as a competitor, you want to play too. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do these things. I'm trying to look and analyze, all right, what's going on? This person did that. They play. I try to do this. I don't play. What am I doing? I must be missing something. What am I doing wrong? Or when I think that I do have it and I 100%, then your brain is going, you know, absolutely insane. And I totally was. It was a very frustrating time at that stage. Leaving was also really great too, because then when you put yourself in, I tend to have this, I don't have any issues going into the unknown. It makes me grow further. And then you can start to say, okay, well, if something happens over here, then who's the issue? You know, is it you? Is it the way you need to play? Do you need to listen more? You need to go like this? You need to pat, whatever it is. But as long as, and thanks once again to my parents for giving me a self-reflective mentality that regardless of no or how long it's going to take, as long as you're then eventually turning the light back on yourself, you will figure it out. Mm-hmm. So for anyone else who's also out there and frustrated in whatever position they are in, whether it's you're not playing at all or whatever it is, if you just decide not to blame Coach Gansler or Coach blah, 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 or your teammate who gave you the bad pass, you have no idea how much better you will get and how quicker you will get, because you're right. You said how much further along you would be. That realization can change things overnight. Mm-hmm. Overnight. Your mentality will change. The whole world around you will start to morph, and you'll start to have more fun, and you'll realize that you are the one that is controlling and making everything for yourself. So, yeah, you know.
No, it's interesting. I when you talk about that, it brings me back to situations, because as I mentioned before, yeah, I did all this grinding and I started to go. And when, you know, when I get intro'd or whatever, oh, he's a World Cup player, he won MLS Defender of the Year, you go on and so forth. But dude, I walked on in college. I didn't get drafted into MLS. Like, there was a lot of grinding in a lot of these moments where, what am I supposed to do? I'm doing exactly what these other guys are doing. They play and I don't. And that really hits me right in the heart, because I remember feeling those same frustrations and not knowing whether I was ever going to get a chance. And those are the videos for me. That's the type of content. And that's why I started a podcast that really focuses on this type of stuff, because I don't really have another outlet. You know, a lot of my other stuff's lighthearted, mm-hmm. but like, that is going to be more meaningful, I think, for a player to learn how to cope with that type of stuff in those situations than watching, you know, doing like, oh, the one guy that did 50 around the world, you know, like take those 5 minutes to lose the freestyle stuff and the Pana a little bit, and just go watch a video that talks about how to cope with pressure and expectations and yours and exactly. And everybody else's, right? And dealing with the perception. I think another part that I would want to add there, and I love that we're having this type of conversation, is being true to yourself as a player, but also doing what the coach wants of you. That was really tough for me. And I think you probably ran into it as well, because you love to break people down and you know, create space with some, you have, like I said at the very beginning, you got some sauce, right? I was always envious of the sauce that you have. Like, the game, you just have a natural flow to how you move, and I don't have that flow. In a lot of different ways, I can't dance either. So it's just, I was like, oh man, I want, can I just have like a 5% of what Will John has? But it's that finding that compromise internally of, hey, I love to play the game because of this reason. I don't want to lose that and completely hand over my identity because the coach is trying to stamp it out of me. So how do you deal with that, right? Which is really hard for players too, because like, you want to fit into the system because you want to play, as you mentioned, but you also are playing the game because you love it for these reasons. And so, I think when you came into Kansas City in particular, Coach Gansler, who I love, probably wasn't the most ideal guy for younger players like yourself. Sure. But if you could fight through that, then... Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way, which I actually think you made the right decision, because you grew up there and getting out of your bubble was probably important for you at that time. But that's always, we don't get taught how to do that. We don't get taught, you just have to live through it. But if you had a couple things, you know, because we had mentors along the way, it sounds like your dad was a good resource, or your mom as well. And they give you these little nuggets of like, think about this. And you had to, oh, okay, that makes sense. And you start to use that as a lens, right? That you start to see the world through, and it helps you solve some of these problems and help you learn how to cope. I will say really quick, I went on loan to Lech Poznan my second year in the league. So I went to Lech, which ended up producing Robert Lewandowski after me. But for a while, I was the only World Cup
after what you taught them.
Exactly. But that was good for me, because I got out of my bubble. I got to go to a European team in Poland But it was hard. It was a hard time. They have no respect for Americans, so you're kind of fighting a couple things there. And it was also very cool, because I went to a city that loved the team. Like, every move was monitored. You know, the attention on you. If the team won, everybody loved you. If they lost, you couldn't go outside. Like, I love those states. I love that pressure. But
totally.
Yeah, and you don't get that over here in the States. But That was a very important time in my life because I had to face up to some things that I didn't have to had I stayed in my bubble. So I think we probably had to live through the same thing.
Then I will give you then this, since we're almost done here. Unfortunately, this is being good.
We could talk all day, I think.
Clearly. Yeah. I know, because we haven't caught up. Honestly, it's funny that it took a podcast for us to actually find time. Every time I see you, it's either crossing. I remember I was with the athlete council and like passing by, and you're literally what was it? What do you call it? Like emceeing an event outside of like Orlando or something. I'm like trying to talk. I'm like, hey, did you see the YouTube? You see what's going on? You're like, nah, I haven't said it. All right, guys. Yeah. So this is what we got going on.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so, it takes this to get us to go. But good. I would say, are you coaching? Or are you director? Do you also hold director status at that club?
Yeah, I'm a technical director and the head coach of the USL League 2 team, the San Francisco Glens. Unfortunately, our season got canceled this year. But it's funny because, listen, and I'm sure you'll run into this too, people will come up and talk to you if you're coaching them or whatever, and they want to talk about your media persona. And as you can tell through this, I'm pretty serious about the game. I love it. I'm a student. I want to continue to learn and obviously give back with the stuff that I've learned. And I get out there and people are calling me Conradinho, which is my nickname, or they'll bring up some old video or Coach Jimmy. And I'm like, listen, boys, I'm happy to talk about this before and after. But for the 90 minutes or 2 hours that I got you, like, I'm here to help you get better. So I'm going to shed that for a little bit. I'm going to be super serious. I probably basically hit the switch as a coach. I think I probably become pretty intimidating at that point. But I'm really there to help give back. And it's great for me because I love the media stuff. And I love having these conversations, because even if one listener takes something away from it, I think job well done for both of us to be able to pay it forward or pass it on. But when I go out there, it's like there's no camera, right? It's just me and them, and I'm just trying to help them get better, and I love that. So it's very cool for me, and I think USL League 2 is a great level for me at the moment.
That's cool. I saw that. When I saw that, I thought that was cool, and I was thinking also how fun. And I know I can imagine the excitement, because when you do have this big media, persona, and you're out there, and these guys see you, and God knows, like we said, and all those things, like. So this guy's gonna be my coach, exactly. This is gonna be around. It's kind of like,
they don't know what to do with me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I was just going to ask the last thing, what about I don't even know how to phrase this question in the proper way. Do young American players need to, so you left, when did you leave? Sorry. One more time to Lech Poznan. How far is that in your career were you?
I was 20. It's 2000. So I was 23.
Okay. So you're 23 when you went over. Mm-hmm. Do young players need to do that? Young American players does everyone need to eventually, do they need to get a little bit? Like, do they need to do what I did, play 3 years and then go? Do you need to just go?
I don't know if there's a clear answer, right? Everybody's a little bit different. Situations are going to be different, but I understand the crux. We should have a little theme song every time we say crux. The crux of your message ultimately is getting out of your bubble and challenging yourself and making yourself uncomfortable.
Right.
I wish that more MLS teams would loan their players out for short stints. I think our younger players would benefit immensely from that. I would assume that our youth academies, now that they're a lot more robust and every club has one and there's a lot more investment there, that those possibilities are probably happening, and or the competition is better, right? So they're getting challenged and maybe getting out of that bubble in a more meaningful way.
Yeah.
When I came into the league, dude, you had to make the 18-man roster. There was no youth academy system. So what happened was, because we only had 10 teams in the league at that point, my San Jose Earthquakes didn't make the playoffs. Our season was done at the end of September, and preseason was until January. So it was very cool of MLS to be cool with me going. We had a Polish player on our team who was already going, and that got set up. So all that communication between the clubs and the leagues, everything was set, and they're like, well, we could take another player if you want. So it ended up being me and Ian Russell, who now coaches Reno. But, I do think it's important to get out of your bubble, to get out of your safety net, to learn how to fend for yourself, to learn how to survive. And I'll say very quickly that when I didn't get drafted, I won the national championship my senior year at UCLA, but I was a walk-on. And I thought for sure I'd get drafted because I was starting on the team that won it. And there was four other seniors with me, and they all got drafted and I didn't. And I was crushed.
Wow.
I was really crushed because I had some entitlement there, right? I just assumed that I would get drafted because I was on the best college team in the country. Had I got drafted right away and gone to an MLS team, I would have sat. I would have watched other guys play because, as I said before, you had to make the 18-man roster, and there are a lot of talented guys on every team. But instead, I went down and played in the A-League, which is probably equivalent of USL Championship now. And I got to play 30 games in 6 months. I slept on floors. I made $800 a month. I ate top ramen. I trained with the team in the morning, and I would train by myself in the afternoon, and I would do my own double days. And I got to play against Mexican League teams, which were really great. I mean, I had to decide that year if I really wanted it or not. It wasn't about a blue check mark on social media or about making money. It was just to prove, can I do it? Am I good enough? And that year was like really my first time of professionally getting out of my bubble, where you're competing with other grown men to put food on the table, which is a much different mentality than playing with your friends on your club team, playing with your academy team, or playing in college. Yes. So yes, ultimately the short answer is yes, you should try to find opportunities that get you out of your bubble. But I think you can try to find situations that where you can have it both ways, where, okay, I'm playing with my academy team for 9 months, but hey, for these 3 months, would it be okay if I went overseas and played in Spain or wherever? Just go, even if it's a fourth division, even I don't care what level it is, just go over there and see what it's about. You know, South America, it doesn't matter where you go. It really is more about the experience gained from feeling uncomfortable and figuring out a way to still have success. I mean, those are the ones that will end up making it and having a long career.
That's what everything that, you know, essentially that you said is what's made me who I am, which is giving me this ability to feel that the world is literally is close to me. Everything is close. The world, I'm a global citizen, true and true. Like, it really feels to me like I can go anywhere. I have friends all over, also thanks to the game, and also thanks because I am constantly out of my bubble, you know, all the time. So I don't have any issues with that. And because I, in a sense, got addicted to that feeling of getting out of my bubble, just like anything, it becomes easy. And because it became easy, I got better at it. And out of nowhere, I'm, you know, actually enjoying all of these things that were once difficult. So in any case, all right, guys, that is it. It is unfortunate, but we have to go. And you got anything you want to throw out? I mean, we'll put all your links and all that stuff.
I mean, if you want to laugh,
you got so much.
At Jimmy Conrad. On most platforms, YouTube, it's the Jimmy Conrad. I've slowed down on YouTube because I'm watching a lot of Will John videos and I just can't compete. So
perfect.
That's my issue. I can't compete with this guy. He's much better than me on YouTube.
We got to get you actually on. Maybe we'll probably throw.
We'll figure it out.
Stuff,
I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, definitely. But all right, guys, that is it. Make sure to subscribe. Check all this stuff out. Shout out to Rode for sponsoring the podcast, and we'll see you guys later. Peace.